It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Inside Sources. Inside Sources with Boyd Matheson.
Well, a bill ensuring your data privacy online is getting bipartisan support in Congress. And while this is something most people support, are the lawmakers getting the policy details right? Remember, it always comes down to the devil in the details of those bills. And so to help us break all of that down, Brendan Pugh is the policy counsel for the Cybersecurity and Emerging Threats team at our friends over at the R Street Institute. And Brandon, thanks for joining us today.
No, I'm glad to be here, Boyd. It's a lot going on in data privacy and security, so always happy to be here to talk about it.
Well, let's dive in and look at this bipartisan draft bill. We always get a little concerned when things are done behind closed doors. We know there has been bill text started to emerge, and so we start to see it in the light of day. But give us a quick assessment in terms of what is in this bill, what does it actually do, and then we can start breaking down where we might have some concerns.
So you're right. It's been rumored probably for the past week, but just last Friday, we saw the discussion draft of the American Data Privacy and Protection Act. And that's really the first time we've seen a bipartisan and bicameral attempt to pass data privacy and security legislation. To your point, we've seen a lot of proposals over the years, but this is the first one, you know, in my opinion, to make a real attempt at compromise. We've had several great proposals in the past, but there's been several sticking points, and this bill really tries to address those sticking points to try to find compromise between advocates as well as industry.
And so as you look at that, what are some of the key points that have allowed this one to maybe get a little juice and a little momentum where it could actually get on the floor and have some good debate and maybe even get passed?
Yeah, so historically there's been a few major sticking points, but just to flag two of them is preemption and how we address a private right of action, or PRA. So to start with preemption, essentially, if we pass a federal law, how will that interact with existing state laws and future ones? And that's really important in Utah, because Utah obviously has passed the Utah Consumer Privacy Act. So the big question is, how will that act interact with a new federal law? And that's, there's been a big divide between Democrats and Republicans how to address that. On one side, there's something like our organization has called for is, We do believe there should be a national standard, but we do think there's room for states to continue to act. And that's kind of what this bill has done. It's broadly speaking calling for one federal law, but it has a series of carve-outs where states could continue to legislate. And that ranges from civil rights laws to consumer protection statutes. So that's one side. And the other aspect is a private right of action, something you don't see in Utah, but essentially – if an individual's rights are violated, can they themselves directly sue the person or the covered entity that violates them? Mm-hmm. And Republicans in industry have historically been adamantly against that for the most part, with some exceptions. But in this bill, we do see that. It's limited, but there is a private right of action included, which is not what we saw in the last leading Republican bill last session as well as this session.
And so let's talk about some of those components there. We know one of the other components that is in the bill that it would require companies to minimize what data they collect. It seems that between the algorithms and who's got your name on what list, and I happen to be one of those people who I am on every Democratic mailing list and on every Republican mailing list. And so my email box is over flooded by, I can see third, fourth, fifth generation sell-offs of my data as someone who's interested in politics. And so how do we start to manage that? What's in the bill in terms of minimizing what data can be collected and then how that can be shared?
First, you are spot on with that. That is a precise need for this legislation overall. It's just, people's information is out there, and every single day it's being miscorrectly used and then not properly safeguarded. Mm. So that is a major attempt at this bill, is kind of there's two sides of it. One, to empower individuals in terms of how their information is to be used and what rights they have, whether it's a right to access that or delete it. On the other side of the bill is is the security and protection aspect, placing a burden, or I shouldn't say burden, but an obligation on companies to actually safeguard that. Because there's, you know, our adversaries want this data. And then even not foreign adversaries, even at home, there's a lot of misuse of this data. You know, data brokers are frequently in the news of collecting mass amounts of data. And there's not a lot of law surrounding that practice. Several states, five to be exact, are proactive and have state legislation. But if you're not in one of those states, broadly speaking, you don't have protection. And that's something this bill would seek to address.
All right. And what are some of the other things, as you've had a chance to dive into that, what are some of the other things that we should be watching, things that might end up being debated or maybe even amended out or in? What are some of the things that you're trying to track as this gets a little more serious in terms of consideration?
Yeah, so this bill is unique because it does have the ranking member and the chair on the House side, as well as the ranking member on the Senate side from the Commerce Committee. Obviously, Senator Cantwell is missing on the Senate side, and there's been several reasons why she's missing that have been said publicly, as well as some you could just guess by reading, you know, her current legislation. So something that she's voiced concerns with, as well as advocates, right now the private right of action has a four-year delay, so it's not something you could use immediately. So I wouldn't be surprised if you see some movement on that or some change. Obviously, I'm not in Congress, but I think that would be a natural area that there could be movement. And to the bill drafters' credit now, the three members that are on the bill, in their press release, they've called for a dialogue and conversation with other members, because for this to get over the finish line, there needs to be widespread support on both sides of the aisle. So this can't be something that just stays with three members. And likely, like as you know, with all legislation, there probably will be changes. And I think that will be one of them. A second one is dealing with arbitration. A lot of times people are forced into arbitration agreements as part of an agreement they sign. So rather than going directly to a lawsuit. So I know there's some concerns by Democrats and activists whether that is a proper practice, but on the industry side, it's something that, you know, individuals are freely agreeing to and it's commonly done. So I think there will be some movement on that as well, because that is a difference between a Senator Cantwell approach as well as what we see in this new bill. Just to flag two areas of disagreement.
Very important stuff there. Brandon Pugh, the Policy Counsel for the Cybersecurity and Emerging Threats Team at the R Street Institute. Brandon, appreciate your perspective on one that everyone's got their eye on, and one that would be really extraordinary if you could get a bipartisan bill across on cybersecurity. Really interesting stuff. Great perspective as always. Thanks for joining us, Brandon.
No, thank you, Boyd. Anytime.
All right. Again, that's our friends over at the R Street Institute, Brandon Pugh, who's the policy counsel there. And this is one of those that we often talk about. Everybody says, oh, I'm worried about my data privacy, my data security. And yet nothing really seems to move there. I think there's some interesting debate in terms of what happens at the state level versus what happens at the federal level and how those intersections will be navigated. That's going to be a tricky one for sure. But most important, I think it actually empowers consumers a little bit more to be able to decide, you know, how much of their data is shared, who it's shared with. And then being able to take some action as a result of that, I think that's going to be a really interesting part of the conversation as we look at data and privacy security. And again, encouraging a bipartisan, bicameral approach to this one. Radical stuff. We like to see that in Congress, and we'll continue to track that as well. All right, coming up, how do we fix higher education? There's a question for you. We've had a lot of conversations about forgiving student debt. Senator Ben Sasse from Nebraska, who used to head a university, Midland College, did an amazing turnaround effort there. He's had some thoughts about what it's actually going to take to make it affordable, accessible, and powerful for the future of America. Stay with that. Coming up after Top of the Hour News.
A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.